Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we'll hear from Uncle John. More on that in a moment. I'm going to have a little chit-chat with Eric and get some gift ideas for creatives, share some gift ideas for creatives in your life. And we'll end with words from the Wolf Whisperer about his new book, Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. So let me jump straight on in here. I sat down with Uncle John last week. And interesting fellow, an interesting book. And it's not something that, you know, I ever really thought we'd cover on the show. But when I looked at it, I found it quite interesting. After many different career tracks, you'll hear a few of those in our conversation. Gordon Javna eventually turned his love of fascinating facts into a new and longstanding career. And that career was this. He adopted the pseudonym Uncle John, and became the editor-in-chief and publisher of the Uncle John's Bathroom Reader series. And the one we're talking about is, it's fantastic. It is just packed full of those kind of facts you just love to throw out at dinner parties and appear really smart. So he is down in Ashland, Oregon. He's been doing this for more than two decades, and more than 15 million copies have been sold of the Factastic Bathroom Reader. And I began this conversation, I believe that's more than any in the publishing industry, so as far as bathroom readers go, so that's a good track record there. He has a large editorial team working with him, so we're going to talk a little bit about that when we first start this conversation with him, and he's explaining to us how this all comes together, because it's always interesting to figure out, well, you know, where do these ideas come from and how do they come together? And my guest, Gordon Javna, his book, Uncle John's Factastic Bathroom Reader, and we'll bring that to you right now. Most of the books that we do on our show are fairly serious. This is what I call a really fun book, but there's a heck of a lot of serious research behind it. How long did it take you originally to put this book together, and how long do updates take?
Well, the latest edition of Uncle John's Bathroom Reader is all new. So there are no updates, but it takes us pretty much from the moment we start putting the book together until it goes to press. It's pretty much a year of work, and that's five or six editors and researchers plus a couple of freelance writers. But in addition to that, since we are an annual edition, that is to say we've been publishing this kind of book for, we're in our 28th year, we have the luxury of working year to year, and there's can be, in other words, it can take us two or three years to develop enough material to write an article. And our articles are short for the most part. They're one, two, and three pages for the most part. So it wouldn't seem like we need a lot of information, but they are very condensed and very concise, so it could take us that long. Plus, it's a long answer to your question, but in addition to that, we develop topic lists, ideas that go back several years. In other words, we add constantly, and we use them as the material becomes available, as the research becomes available.
Okay, well, that's great, because that took care of like three or four of my questions there. But what I want to do is, for anybody who's thinking, it's called Uncle John's Factastic Bathroom Reader. You know, I always kind of thought bathroom readers had 11-year-old boy humor in there. This is not true. So tell us a little bit about some of the information that goes into yours.
Well, I won't say there's no 11-year-old.
Well, there is a little.
Because there's a little bit of the 11-year-old boy left in me, and I love bad puns, and I love dumb jokes, and so I collect those quite aside from this book, so I always put in a few. But for the most part, we concentrate on stories that revolve around history, forgotten history mostly, unknown origins of things that are part of our lives. We also write articles about science, and we write articles about sports. And we love wordplay, so we always have lots of bits of wordplay in the book. But it's serious, for the most part, serious stuff. I mean, we inject humor into places that you might not. For instance, we have an article on the Department of Silly Measurements, which is a collection of, you know, these are real measurements. They may not be used very frequently, but they are, you know, but somebody considers them real measurements. And the good example of that would be the Garn, which was named after Senator Jake Garn of Utah, who was the first sitting member of Congress to go into space when he flew on the Space Shuttle Discovery in 1985. The thing is, he had very little training and became violently ill from the effects of weightlessness in space. So people at NASA created the Garn as sort of a derisive term for a measurement of space sickness.
Right.
And one of the scientists at NASA said most guys get to maybe a tenth Garn, if that high. And Garn got to one. So that's totally being totally sick and totally incompetent is one Garn. We like real stuff like that.
Yeah,
and funny, but it's also interesting. You got to. I just told you a little bit about the history of NASA, but I did it. I framed it in terms of the space sickness measurement.
Yes, and it's kind of the kind of stuff that you might throw out at dinner parties. Oh, by the way, I read or I heard. Or I mean, this is
yes,
kind
indeed.
Of that kind of information. I'm guessing that that your background plays into this a lot because you had a very varied background. Just to let listeners know, I read you went to art school, you became a musician, a real estate developer, a writer, restaurateur, president of a preschool, brew pub owner, and then finally editor of this book. So how does your background...
Why? Is that a lot? Is that varied? I don't know. It's, doesn't everybody do all those different things?
I did quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the main factor in my doing this job and doing it, I think, doing it pretty well is that I have a short attention span. That's probably the primary thing. And plus, it's not easy for me to read. I know my wife reads like crazy, and for me, it's much more of an effort. And so, these two factors, plus my interest in knowing a little bit about everything, those things are what make this the perfect job for me. The short attention span, because these are short articles, and I want to get the full story in an article, and that's the that's the direction that I give to writers that work for me, is that you have to tell a good story in a short amount of time. And the difficulty reading, it translates to you have to not just tell a story, but draw a good picture for me, because I'm going to have trouble otherwise. And if you throw in lots of extraneous information, it's going to distract me. So and this love of trivia that I have, which, by the way, I think I share with most people in the world. You know, we love these little bits of information. You love knowing something that not only did you not know it before, but probably others didn't know it either. And now we've just created a little club that where we're sharing this kind of information. And, that makes it all fun and a good read.
Yes, and as you said, you know, we're an attention deficit disorder society right now.
Absolutely.
And so these short...
We sometimes joke that the bathroom reader is written by people with ADD for people with ADD.
Yeah. So what kind of research goes into this? Because I'm looking here at a chapter on 9 weird facts about babies. Number one, I didn't know this, but there's no reason I should, I guess, since I don't have kids. They can't taste salt.
Yes. Well, the research for something like this, and this is one of those things where you start with one fact, and then you say, I wonder, I can't swear to this, but I have no doubt that the writer, whose name is Tom Little, who wrote that piece, I have no doubt that he read in a scientific journal one or two of these facts and said, I wonder what else characterizes babies in the womb. What other facts are there about infants that we could collect? And then you start down the rabbit hole and find all kinds of interesting things and sort out the ones that are most interesting. And then you have to double check. You can't just read it in one source. You have to double check and then fact check. And they are all fact checked. So I'm sure they're true.
Yeah, a lot of work in that. So some of the topics you talk about are weird bodies of the rich and famous, the wild man of Borneo, animals under the influence, the mad potter of Biloxi, 10 longest wars in history. So there's a great deal of subject material here. Do you have a couple of favorite pieces of trivia that you want to share with us?
Well, I love the origin of the 3D printer that we talk about in this book. And one of the reasons is, as I said, I love origin stories. Also, people ask me if we're going to run out of things. And I always say, well, no, there's new things all the time. And that's a good example of that. That we couldn't have written about 3D printers 10 years ago because we didn't know they existed, even though they did exist 10 years ago. And it's a great story because the guy who invented it was actually doing something else. He was in charge of the process called stereolithography in a furniture factory, and that is they applied the last coat of finish to the furniture was a photosensitive polymer, which means it's liquid until it was subjected to or exposed to ultraviolet light, and then it became hardened. And they used this process to coat the furniture. But he also had the job of making scale models, or not him personally, but he had to contract with a fabricator to make scale models of the furniture that they made in the factory. And he was very frustrated by the fact that it took a long time to get those scale models. So he developed a process using the stereolithography process. He would make very thin veneers of flat veneers of plastic, and then using computer software, he would cut them out into shapes, which, when stacked on top of each other, created the scale models for the furniture. And that is how 3D printing still works.
He also
found great examples of how they're using using 3D printers today. And that a couple of those would be like a musician named Scott Summit, who makes acoustic guitars on a 3D printer, and a Chinese construction company that makes components for buildings out of a 3D printer. In fact, they use recycled materials as the ink for the 3D printers, and they've built an entire six-story apartment building out of 3D printed components. But my favorite is that NASA is experimenting with 3D printers for making food in space. They have a model where they have one of the ink cartridges has dough in it, another has cheese, and another has sauce, and with this they are 3D printing pizzas.
Edible pizzas. You're not talking edible pizzas.
Correct. That's correct.
Wow.
And you think, well, wouldn't it be easier to just take a frozen pizza? And of course it would, but this is the edge of science fiction like technology that they're experimenting with, and that's fascinating.
Yeah, wow. It's there's quite a few. I mean, I obviously haven't read it all. It's 500 pages long. There's a ton of information in here, and as we said, a breadth of topics in here. But I found myself constantly going, wow, I didn't know that. One of them here is my mother, when I was a child, taught me to tell east, northwest, from the sun direction, and the time from the sun, and from the moss on the trees and stuff like that. When I moved to Seattle, it was very difficult to tell the time from the sun or whether I was heading north or south, because we often have gray days and no sun. And there's a piece in here about how to use your watch as a compass, which I'm going to try out next time I'm out and about. So there's a ton of really interesting information in here.
Yeah, little things like that. There's an article about how to give CPR to your dog, if needed. But there's also serious stuff. There's an article about called The Life and Times of Oney Judge. And Oney Judge was George Washington's slave. Her father was an indentured servant. He was white, and her mother was a slave, and she was black. So she was a mixed race child, and she was a favorite of the Washington family, and went with them to Philadelphia when Washington was elected president, because that was the nation's capital then. But there was a lot more freedom in the North for slaves, so she had some freedom to move around. Well, she heard. She learned that Martha Washington was planning to sell, or excuse me, to give her to her daughter Elizabeth Custis as a wedding present, and she didn't want to go. So she made her way to the docks and found a sympathetic ship's captain who smuggled her to New Hampshire, where she lived for many years, despite the fact that Washington sent people to recapture her numerous occasions. And at the end of her life, long after Washington had died, she continued to live in New Hampshire. She had a family, and she was interviewed by a journalist who pointed out to her that had she remained with the Washingtons in Mount Vernon, she would have had a much easier life than she had in New Hampshire. And this woman, Oney Judge, responded, "Yes, that may be true, but then I wouldn't have been free."
I love that. I wouldn't have been free. And that was Gordon Javner, who, of course, we also know as Uncle John. And his book is Factastic Bathroom Reader. And you can find out more at bathroomreader.com. Ton of information up there. And I'm just looking at his Twitter feed here. Interesting, there are about 550,000 miles of internet cable on the bottom of the world's oceans so far. Can you imagine what that's going to look like in a few more years? And since Star Wars just came out, the new one, it says one of Luke Skywalker's lightsabers sold at auction for, guess how much, Eric? Okay.
A whole lot of money.
Oh.
I don't know, $3 million?
Actually, no, a lot less than that. It was only $240,000.
Still, that's a whole lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah, I probably would have gone a little higher knowing how crazy people are about Star Wars, but that was an interesting thing.
Well, the problem was that they took it out of the box. You know, you can't take Star Wars stuff out of the packaging. It automatically loses some of its value. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Otherwise, it would have been $3
million. Another one of the tweets here says, imitating royalty. In the UK, people wear paper crowns on Christmas Day. Maybe we'll take a break and we'll talk about that when we come back. You can find out more about Uncle John on the Twitter feed, his Twitter feed, @bathroom_reader. And we'll take a very quick break. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay tuned.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
You must have thrown 1,000 pitches teaching him to hit a home run. Spent countless Saturdays running routes so he could learn to hit an open receiver. Endless afternoons teaching him how to hit the three-pointer. But how much time have you spent teaching him what not to hit? Teaching boys that all violence against women is wrong is one of the most important things a man can do. Learn how to start the conversation at teachearly.org. Brought to you by Futures Without Violence and the Ad Council.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
More talk, less rock. Come on, that's a good thing. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Happy holiday. Happy holiday. While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holiday. Happy holiday.
And welcome back, everybody. And yes, we're celebrating the holidays this week. You know, everybody's rushing around like blue-butted flies. I have to put that in correct terminology there. but everybody's rushing around going crazy right now. So we thought we'd kick back a little in the studio here and just have a few minutes chit-chat here, because Eric and I very rarely get a chance to have a lengthy conversation.
That's true, especially on air.
Well, especially on it. Yeah. Yeah. It's only an hour a week, and so we try and cram as much information in as possible to the show. And before the show, you're busy doing stuff. And
true. And then you're busy as well.
And I'm busy doing stuff, and then there are people coming in here, so it's kind of nice. And you're going away for the holidays, right?
Yeah, well, I'm going to kind of be in Tacoma, where I live, on Christmas, but then I'm going to head down to California after that. To see the extended family down in California. So that'll be nice and kind of do both things, I think. It's good to be home for the holidays, as all the songs say, but, you know, you can have two homes.
Yes, very true. Two Christmases.
And two Christmases, that's right.
And our last guest actually today is the Wolf Whisperer, and he's going to talk about traveling safely with your pet, because I know you're taking your dog down.
That's true, yeah.
Is it your dog's first long trip?
Yeah, she has been to the coast and back, but she hasn't been quite so far before. So I'm hoping she's okay and doesn't get carsick or anything like that. But she tends to just sleep a lot, so I'm hoping that'll be what happens on this car trip. This will be kind of an experiment.
There you go. So before the break, we talked about one of the trivia questions was about from the Fantastic Bathroom Reader Twitter feed. Was about the Brits wearing paper crowns at Christmas. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. But it does make me wonder. I'm imagine, because every country seems to celebrate a little bit differently, and even within, you know, the United States, different regions celebrate kind of differently. So, what are some of the Christmas traditions in the UK that we don't have over here? Because I'd love to hear about those.
Well, I guess that's one of them. We have Christmas crackers. Excuse me. And I swear to God, I don't know anyone who's worn a paper crown now, since like the 60s or 70s.
You mentioned the Christmas crackers. Are we talking saltines here?
No, we're talking like paper crackers. I don't know how to describe them, right? They're paper tubes. Uh-huh. And they've got Christmassy colored wrapping paper around it. And you've each got one end and you pull it like a firecracker.
Okay.
So... And it makes a little...
So it's a little noisemaker, then.
It makes a tiny little noise.
Pop.
And then inside, you have a gift, which is, you know, something like a beautiful plastic whistle or, you know, a little doll's comb.
So a little prize inside, kind of like Cracker Jacks.
I guess.
Well, Cracker Jacks, famously, it's like a caramel covered popcorn that comes with a little prize in each box.
Oh, okay.
So I wonder if there's some connection there. Cracker Jacks, cracker, Christmas crackers, little prize in each.
Maybe, but you get that anyway.
I think we need to get John back on the phone because this could be a fun fact for the next edition of the Bathroom Reader.
Yeah, and then you get, you usually get one of those noisemakers where you blow, you know, like you have on New Year, and you get a paper crown. And, of course, it raised the question, why do Brits do that? And I'm like, I have no clue. Because they're in the cracker.
See, we and only so do I, that when we go to Burger King. They give us a paper crown.
I just Googled it real quick. And whether this is true or not, because honestly, I don't know where some of these answers come from. But they said that centuries ago, this one person said, centuries ago, servants would change places with their master and they were waited on like gentry just for one day of the week. But they couldn't wear gold crowns and wore paper ones instead. I don't know that I believe that, but, you know, let's just pass that off as an excuse right now. So what other traditions do we have? I don't know that we have any real traditions that we don't have here.
Well, what about Boxing Day?
Well, Boxing Day is, yeah, that's my favorite day, actually. And I always do observe Boxing Day.
I know it's something they do in Canada as well,
Canada.
But I've never been quite clear on the concept, and especially the name Boxing Day. Is that when you box up all your gifts and return them if you don't like them?
You know, there's 100 different explanations for that as well, because what I was told was that in the olden days when people, you know, Christmas was more about religion and being grateful and thankful and all that good stuff, that they would reserve exchanging gifts until Boxing Day, which is the day after Christmas. But, you know, it's an observed holiday and, you know, it was always huge in my family. Like Christmas Eve afternoon, my parents were off. So from Christmas Eve, Christmas Day and Boxing Day, that's your Christmas. So I was really shocked when I came here and I'm like, what? I only have one day. I have to go to work the next day.
Well, what are some of the traditions of Boxing Day? Is it just a big dinner or is there more gifts exchanged or how does it work?
Well, you know, every family is a little differently, I think. And I just read on here and I don't know where people come up with their facts because, you know, I lived in England most of my life and it says that people always exchange gifts on Boxing Day. Not true. Another one I saw. One tradition is true, according to what I'm looking at right here. But this is a true tradition, and that is the Queen's speech. And when I was a little girl, it didn't matter what was happening on Christmas Day. The second the Queen's speech came on television, everything stopped, and you had to be quiet, and we had to listen to the Queen's speech because my grandmother, my grandparents were, you know, true royalists, and so that's one. The other thing to do with Boxing Day is that I heard, I mean, they do have boxing match on Christmas, on Boxing Day, and so some people title it to that. But the truth is, I really don't know, and I haven't found anyone who really does know. They'll say they do, but I haven't found anyone who really does know. So,
all right.
What do you have in your family as far as traditions?
You know, something we do that I'm not sure that everybody does is because we have such a big extended family, we used to just draw names for giving gifts.
Right.
So you would give a gift to one other person in your extended family rather than try and buy gifts for everybody in the extended family. And recently we changed that over to an ornament exchange. So rather than a particular gift, you draw a name and you pick out a Christmas ornament for that person. So we're giving a Christmas ornament. So I guess everybody's tree gets fuller every year. So that's one thing we do in our family. I don't know how common that is, but something that I enjoy.
Yeah, I used to like to send my mom a Christmas ornament every year. You know, just a little special something. Like she was so in love with California. She loved California. So I'd usually get like a California Christmas Santa on a surfboard or something like that to send to her. So let's look at... we're both in the creative field. You're a musician outside of here. So a couple of ideas that people might like for last-minute gifts.
Yeah, if they have a musician in their life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody would love a new guitar or a new trombone or whatever it is that that they play if they're a musician. But those things, admittedly, can be very pricey, and people can be very particular about those things. But, you know, that we always need supplies. You know, if you have a guitarist friend in your life, strings. These are typically things that guitarists can skimp on, are like strings, cables, those little supplies that, you know, accessories.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the particulars of the instruments that your friends play, a gift card for some, like a musician's friends or a guitar center, or even better, your local music store, it can be really helpful.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we think of giving strings as a Christmas gift, that's kind of like giving somebody socks. But it's not, because if you're a musician, you're nerdy about your equipment.
Let me tell you, if you're at a gig and you break a string and then you realize, I just got a new set of strings for Christmas and here they are in my case, you've just saved that person's life, basically. And so they're going to remember you very fondly or think of you very fondly.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite gifts is I have two handmade pens, and two of the pens that I have were handmade by my dad, and I just love that he, you know, every time I write with it, I, you know, it was carved by his hand, so
yeah,
it's like touching something. And nobody is allowed when they come into my studio to touch that pen because I know it's just going to wander off.
Mm.
It's so nice.
But do you feel more creative when you're writing with that?
I do. My sister sent me a lovely gift because I was struggling with, you know, sometimes you just get a little stale. You don't feel inspired by what you're doing. And I think I'd been working on one project too long and was too close to it, too emotionally close to it. And she'd gone to Venice on vacation. And she said, I sent you something. Look out for it. And so I was running to the mailbox every day and it finally comes and I open it up. And now, most people might think this is a strange gift, but I love it. And my sister hit it right on the nail. It's actually a feather quill pen with a gold nib that she got from Venice. It's a beautiful turquoise feather. It stands in its own little inkwell, and it has its own little bottle. And she said, she just wrote a note in there and said, put that on your desk to inspire you. And I do feel inspired when I look at it.
Yeah.
So
classes up the joint as well. Suddenly we're in the Renaissance.
It does. So I think that, you know, when you're creative, all these the gifts that people think, oh, you know, that's for their work. They won't like it. We often do. We often
absolutely.
Do. I found something this morning that I'm absolutely ecstatic about, and I've got to check it out, and maybe I should check it out more before I talk about it on air. But for anyone who's a writer and has to follow style guides, you know, we've got the Chicago Manual of Style. We've got the New York Times Manual of Style. If you work for companies, they've got their own style book. You know, one of the standards, of course, the gold standard is the Chicago Manual of Style. And then, of course, the Associated Press style book. And I found this morning when I was looking for ideas, they have software that you can put onto your, attaches to your Word program, works within your Word program.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of just relying on Word to do your grammar and spell check, you've actually got the Associated Press style guide checking it for you, which as a writer, if you're submitting to publications, is important. And it's a really great tool. And it's pretty affordable. It's very affordable.
Nice.
So I was excited about that. But pens, journals, mugs, anything to inspire, you know, put in your studio to inspire.
Some of those great accessories that don't cost too much money either.
Exactly.
You know, it's the same thing with musicians, as I was saying. You know, if the person plays, I don't know, like a trumpet or something, they may need or a saxophone, they may need a new reed.
Right.
You know, these sort of things are great. Polish is always good, you know. So those accessories of the things that your friends and loved ones that they love can be a very nice gift.
Yes. I used to play the clarinet. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I did.
You've been holding out on me. We'll have to jam sometime.
Well, I have not touched one in many, many years. It wasn't particularly sexy, you know, and here I am, a 14-year-old girl, and playing Acker-Bilk's clarinet. But it had a good sound to it. But the thing I hated, it just reminded me, because you were talking about reeds.
Uh-huh.
When my instructor would come into school once a week to, you know, give us private, there were three of us that had private lessons. He'd come into school and he would always tune, make sure it was in tune.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a really heavy smoker for so days after. It's a wonder I didn't become addicted to tobacco.
Right. Secondhand exposure.
So yeah, reeds would have been a great gift for me.
Right.
But anyway, the long and short of it is I have a list of 100 gift ideas. And if anybody listening would like to get those, some of them are more expensive, some of them are really inexpensive. And they're all doable within a couple of days. If you'd like to email me at info@conversationslive.net, I'd be happy to send that on to you. Just email info@conversationslive.net and put creative gift list in the subject line, and I'll make sure you get a copy of that. Well, all right, so we've got a guest coming up shortly. So I hope you have a great Christmas, Eric, because I know we'll be rushed at the end of the show.
Thank you. You as well.
Get some much-deserved downtime. I know it's been a busy year for you with your promotion and new changes and all that stuff going
enough.
On.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember this year. It just went by so fast.
Didn't it? I mean, we were in July, and then all of a sudden, I'm still writing August, and it's December. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's take a break and we'll get hold of our guest, the Wolf Whisperer. His book is called Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. He has a very interesting background, so be interested to talk with him. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to New Pro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 27th, it's an encore presentation of Animal World. Learn about the benefits of Chinese herbs for you and your animal friends. David and Tia Akrish, owners of Heaven and Earth Chinese Herb Healing Center, join me in the studio. We'll get to know them and find out about the services and products they have to offer, then hear listener questions and their free consultations. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
You must have thrown 1,000 pitches teaching him to hit a home run. Spent countless Saturdays running routes so he could learn to hit an open receiver. Endless afternoons teaching him how to hit the three-pointer. But how much time have you spent teaching him what not to hit? Teaching boys that all violence against women is wrong is one of the most important things a man can do. Learn how to start the conversation at teachearly.org. Brought to you by Futures Without Violence and the Ad Council.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're talking now with Brian Bailey. He's the author of Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. Brian has traveled to over 30 countries in Europe, Africa, the jungles of Southeast Asia, and the remote regions above the Arctic Circle in his pursuit of learning the behaviors of hyenas, lions, tigers, and the gray wolf, with an emphasis on how instinct passed from the gray wolf has affected the behavior of our domestic dogs. Brian Bailey, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we're wet and soggy here in Seattle, and you're wet and soggy in Tennessee too right now.
We are wet and soggy.
So we're equal.
Yes, all the dogs smell right now.
Yeah. So let's talk a little about the book, because one of the things that I think you want people to know is it's not a training book per se.
It's not in the old traditional sense where we teach heel, sit, down, stay, come when called. I'm of the mind that when I train with clients, and I have so for over 30 years, I've always educated them first, then we pursue training. It's kind of like the old adage, if you want to repair a watch, it's important to understand how the watch functions first. So it's kind of from that mindset. I want readers to understand what it is that they own. Why does your dog jump on you? Why is it so difficult to teach them to come when called? Why do we have these issues with our dogs? Because you need to see it through their eyes, not through your human eyes. So that's what it's really about. It's about understanding what it is we own.
Yeah. And you say that, you know, I'm guilty of this to some extent too. Many, many people are. We attach our human traits to our pets, and it's the most damaging and paralytic problem associated with dog ownership today. So talk to us a little about that.
Well, you know, we all do it, like you said, even I do. I mean, heck, that's fun. It's fun to do that. I've had dogs that have worn sunglasses that look like Elvis, bandanas. I've been known to share my pizza, and even every now and then someone gives me some really bad tasting beer, but my dogs seem to love it. That's fun. But I think the problem is when we don't believe that it's make-believe. We actually believe that they think like humans, that they carry the same emotions that we carry. When that happens, we typically set ourselves up, and we're left woefully confused and hurt without answer when our dogs act out in ways we didn't expect them to do so. So it's okay to have fun, dress them up if you want to, as long as the dog can tolerate it. But keep in mind, that's not a human. It doesn't think like a human, and it doesn't govern its way of life or the way it navigates through this world the same as a human. It has completely different mechanisms that help it on a day-to-day basis. They're just trying to conform with a bunch of bipeds, and that's what we are to them, just a bunch of bipeds.
Right, right. And there's a line in the book, you're talking about you're in a pet store, and this young woman says to you something to the effect of, dogs have been domesticated for so long that they've lost their natural instinct. And your response to that was what?
Well, they haven't. She's absolutely incorrect. One of the biggest things I like to point out to some people is that in the argument that they're so domesticated, why do they still go through three distinct fear periods? All dogs do. Why is acceptance more important to them between the ages of 8 weeks and 14 weeks than the very food that they eat? Why do our dogs want to jump on us to achieve a head level status? There are so many behaviors that dogs still do that are very wolf-like behaviors. Fortunately, I've yet to see too many people rolling around in their feces, especially after getting a nice haircut from the salon. or worse than eating it. It's crazy when we start to think that they have domesticated to a point to where they're no longer wolf-like. Things do change physically, but instinct is the last thing that will ever go away, and it is still there in our dogs. And I guess I just had the wonderful blessing of studying predators all over this world,
right,
and drawing that comparison back to our dogs and go, wow, that's exactly what our dogs do. That's exactly what they do. I think if a lot of our readers, my readers, had that ability to draw that comparison, they wouldn't think so much like that.
Yeah. I always remember my brother had this great dog. His name was Sandy, and he had obviously been living on the streets for quite a while, quite dirty, quite thin, very skittish. But for some reason, when my brother walked down the alleyway back towards his home, he latched onto my brother, and he would not let go. And he spent the next 12 years attached to my brother.
Right.
So, they have this instinct where they do survive without us, and yet we think that they're never going to. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say there was a study that's been done recently. You can read about it in Trove magazine, National Geographic as well. It was about a year ago, in which they studied the dogs over in Serbia, Bosnia, a couple of the other outlying areas like Ukraine. When a lot of these countries became extremely poor, being war-ravaged and poor, dogs could no longer be kept by most families as pets. So they were just literally let loose. Here, go away from me. Go survive because I can't keep you anymore. I can't afford you, and it's too dangerous. And these dogs have reverted right back to being wolves. They're breeding just once a year. They're hunting in organized groups like wolves do. They're scavenging. It's amazing to see them go right back to doing what they need to do, and doing it in a way that wolves would do it. So they still fall back on those natural mechanisms.
Yeah. And you've spent a lot of time. I mean, you grew up in Alaska Fairbanks, as I understand it, and you had who was the Special Forces survival instructor who was dominant in your life then?
Very dominant. In fact, nowadays, even still, I've had a lot of people ask me this in public at book signings, and it's hard for me to not even choke up. It's amazing that this man was so powerful in my life that kind of when he died in 1971, I kind of put him away. You know, I kept his memories there and mm-hmm. of course and all of his teachings. But I think like humans do to survive and to move on, we kind of put them behind us. Writing this book brought back to life memories that are 45 to 48 years old. And there, I remember my wife, she'd always want me to read my chapters to her when I finished them. And there was two particular chapters in the book I could not read to her. I could not. And I couldn't even read them to you today.
Right.
So an incredibly important man. He was a survival instructor, part of the Special Forces. And he had daughters. He had two little daughters, but he didn't have a boy. And I became that surrogate son. I literally spent more time with him than the rest of my family. Incredible blessing to have been under his wings. I've never met another man like him. That I think they broke the mold when they made him.
Yeah, it's very special to have somebody like that in life. And I should let listeners know you are a recognized award-winning animal behaviorist. So let's look at some tips, because a lot of people are traveling with their animals. Eric is one of them. Our producer is one of them. Can we talk about cages? Because I, for some reason, I'm very anti-cage, and maybe it's because my dog is terrified of them. I was his fourth owner, and I think we have a partnership. I like to think we have a partnership, but he does not. He would not go anywhere near a cage when I took him to a daycare once. What's your view on cages? Because you talk about this in the book about them being enclosed rather than open.
You know, that is part of the downside to some of the domestication process. We have dogs that are suffering from a severely weak genetic baseline. And that's because we breed submissive to submissive, whereas nature doesn't allow that. And all of her social predatory groups is always dominant to dominant, but yet she still manages to put out dominant and submissive. It's called an evolutionary stable strategy. So a lot of our dogs are becoming fearful of things that they naturally should not be fearful of. But if you are going to, and I do believe in using kennels or cages or crates, whatever you want to call them, and part of conforming the dog safely in my world it keeps them from eating things that they shouldn't eat. I used to own a vet hospital for 12 years, and I like to tell people this time of year especially about the time that we had to remove an intact ornament from a dog that had swallowed it. And it was so fragile that when we set it on the stainless steel table where the instruments were, it broke. It's amazing what they will eat. Yeah. Plus, this crate is also good for housebreaking and also good for transporting the dog safely. But you're right. Some dogs are very fearful of kennels. And a lot of these dogs, either A, you have to conform where they're not in them, or B, you have to approach it from a pharmacotherapy regimen to get them over it. But if you are going to use one, I definitely believe in the enclosed kennels. They're more den-like. The open-air kennels are what we would want. But from your dog's perspective, that means I can be attacked from every angle.
Yeah.
Wolf cubs are born underground, and it's a tiny, dark hole. And it means, number one, safety, because nothing hunts today's extant adult wolf. There's no natural predation. But everything hunts the wolf cubs. So that keeps them safe till they're old enough to not be carted away by the big eagles, the big hawks, and to stave off other predators. So our dogs naturally want a very dark, confined space if they're going to go in one, because that means safety to them. It calms them down.
Yeah, that made absolute perfect sense when I read that in your book. So let's look at a couple of tips for traveling with your dog. What kind of things should we be concerned about to keep them healthy?
Well, a couple things. Number one, try to keep your routine, regardless of whether you're traveling somewhere or someone's traveling to you. Do the very best you can to keep your dog's routine the same. In other words, try to take it on a walk if you're used to taking it on a walk every morning. Try to get that thing done. It doesn't have to be as far, but at least a little bit of a walk.
They do like their routine, don't they?
Oh, they thrive on it. They absolutely thrive. Well, you and I would probably gouge our eyeballs out with a fork because it's so mundane. They thrive on it.
Yeah.
They love it. So try to feed your dog the same food. Try to feed it at the same time of day. Stick to those routines. That is number one. Number two, if you are traveling in a vehicle, restrain your dog. Either they make lots of harnesses that can hook up to your seatbelt, or place the dog in a kennel. I was a police canine officer for 3 years, and I can tell you I worked a few accident scenes in which the occupants of the vehicle would have been perfectly fine, except for the 80-pound Labrador that flew forward at 50 miles an hour.
Wow.
Keep that in mind. This thing will become a projectile, just like you would be if you were not restrained. Also, if you're going to another place that has a dog, just because it's family and it's the family dog doesn't mean your dog's going to view it that way. The other dog, the recipient dog, may view your dog as an alien wolf, which out in the wild, they don't tolerate them at all. So you just brought a strange animal onto my territory, so be careful with that as well. You might want to, you know, kind of rethink that or keep the dog separated until they show that they've accepted one another. And then lastly, think about children. The holidays, children are excited. They're very animated. Just make sure. There's a reason why the age group of 2 to 9 is the age group that has been most often every single year in America, to the tune of about 2.5 to 3 million bites per year reported by the CDC.
Mm.
These, you know, when they're head level to a dog no longer views them as children. They view them as adults. And they will give them the same warning they give an adult, or act out against them like they would adults, just that we adults tend to heed it, at least some of us do, but children don't, and they're the recipients of some really nasty bites and even fatalities.
Yeah.
So we have to watch these excited children, especially if they're going to whack the little dog with their new lightsaber that they just got. We have to be very careful.
Yes, I have all the time kids run up to my dog. Luckily, he just licks them to death. But, you know, I can't imagine if I would have to watch him around kids to that extent all the time. Very interesting story. You've got such an interesting background. It'd be lovely to talk to you longer, but we're right at the end of our segment. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Brian?
Absolutely. You know, the title of the book is called Embracing the Wild. That's what I want our readers to do, is embrace this concept. And it is a hard concept because we're naturally fearful of wolves. But the beautiful thing about it is that nature never intended for you to be afraid of dogs. She wanted you to understand them. And so when you read this book, you'll take away from it a different understanding. Just read the reviews. That's what all the top reviewers have said. Wow, you must read this book because you will understand why your dog does, what makes it tick. And I cannot tell you how important that is. My next book, called The Hammer, about dog aggression only, will really drive home that point in a tragic way, not in a misbehaving way, but a tragic way.
Right. Well, let us know when that book comes out. We'd love to have you back, Brian.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed this.
And you can find out more about Brian Bailey and the work that he's doing at tamingthewild.com. Tamingthewild.com and the book again, Embracing the Wild in Your Dog by Brian Bailey. Brian, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you guys.
And to you too. And a Merry Christmas to all of you listening today. If you don't celebrate Christmas, then, you know, it's going to be a little quiet probably around here with people who are celebrating. So just enjoy some downtime. Have some fun. Get some good R&R and be safe on those roads. You know, it's going to be crazy out there. Until next week, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.